Welcome to another episode of Before You Kill Yourself with your host, Leo Flowers. I am Leo Flowers. Today's guest is Susie Mattson, who is the author of Healing Through the Art of Self-Expression, Turning Trauma into Triumph. She's here to share her personal journey of using writing as a therapeutic tool for healing from trauma. Welcome to the podcast, Susie.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You know, I love journaling. I just read this article about 15-minute journals. And it was saying that it's part of journaling for them is this exercise of going in public and just writing down what you see, what the senses take up, you know, the color of someone's shoes, the temperature of the room, a baby crying. You're basically writing down as if your eyes are a video camera. And I know for you that, writing is a therapeutic tool that you use to navigate any intense emotions that may come up. How do you use writing, Susie, in terms of dealing with trauma?
Well, there is a couple of different ways. Back in time when I was 8 years old, my mom just passed away from cancer. And I found out that my father was about to sell me to strangers and put me on a plane abroad to I don't know where. So I ran away from home to save myself. And it took me 34 years before I was able to revisit that event and that trauma in my life. And when I did, I came to a point where I couldn't identify that little girl who was 8 years old and shown such courage and bravery to run away from home. So I decided to write her a letter and at least say thank you for literally saving my life. And that was the starting point of me studying how writing is healing. And exactly what key factors do you need in a writing a healing letter to yourself addressing a past trauma? So I think that the first step is actually to acknowledge what happened. And when we acknowledge, a lot of transformation happens. And then also when we can pull out the life lessons, what have you learned throughout that wound or throughout that adversity? Because when we can identify a life lessons, growth takes place and your level of self-confidence will increase. So that is two really important steps of the writing. On my day-to-day base, I have actually a victory journal. And instead of just having a, you know, doing the checkpoint, you know, everything that I have done, I write down victory, 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 victory. And that happens something with your mind when you choose positive words to describe what you have accomplished during a day. So I do that, both of them.
So what I hear you saying, Susie, is one, acknowledge what has happened. Two, what are the life lessons from what's happened? Because that can help build growth and confidence. And three, you also talk about keeping a victory journal.
Yes.
I want to dig more into the acknowledging of what happens, because in a moment, whether you're in a car crash, you've been assaulted, there's so much that happens in that moment. And what you write down still may only be a part of it. When you're writing down what happens or acknowledging what happens, can you say more to what that means? Are you just acknowledging what's happening on the outside? Are you acknowledging your emotional state going through it? what are we acknowledging in its entirety?
Well, I think that I have been in a serious car. I was passenger in a serious car accident, and I got a severe brain injury that took me over 3.5 years to come back to be able to work again, and also for my childhood trauma. I think that the most important thing acknowledging is that you are not reframing your story. You are true to yourself, even though it's really hard and it hurts, because I have seen so many of my clients, they are just closing the door. They don't want to talk about it. They think they're okay because they're functioning in the day-to-day life. And I was also one of those, because I thought for 34 years that I was okay. I was super successful with my business. And I thought, well, I'm okay. But I wasn't. So I think when we acknowledge, we need to be really honest, brutally honest with ourselves, that this actually happened, and try to look at it, what have happened to me and how have this shaped me? Because when we can acknowledge that, we can see that we have, for example, build up some walls around our hearts because we believe they protect us. We have subconsciously creating some soul-sucking survival patterns. And we can see that we have been shaped by our decision-making, or how we are as a spouse or as a mother, as a father or a leader, or whatever roles we have in our life. So I think the first step is actually acknowledging and be brutally honest to yourself. This happened to me. This is exactly what happened. And this is the life lessons I have learned. And this is how it shaped me. And be honest with that. And then when you see that, then the growth takes place, because you can have a better understanding of yourself instead of, for example, being a victim, you know, having a victim mindset instead of a victorious mindset, or having emotional triggers going on, because a lot of my clients, they re-victimize themselves because they don't have healed the past traumas. And when something new happens, then they're in a worse shape. So,
Yeah, I love this idea of acknowledging what happens, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. unless we do that, unless we acknowledge that things have hit the fan, there's a monster in the room, this person's holding a gun, or my life is in danger, then we're not going to course correct. We're not going to take actions to move mm-hmm. forward and get ourselves out of there. When you look back at that moment, you talked about your mom dying from cancer. You're 8 years mm-hmm. old, and your dad, you said, is trying to, has the intention of selling you. Mm-hmm. That really stuck to me, because me and my girlfriend just watched this movie, Sound of Freedom, about this guy mm-hmm. who has rescued like hundreds of children and people who have been sex trafficked. When you say your mm-hmm. father was trying to sell you for the purpose of what and to who, and how did you acknowledge that?
Well, I don't know exactly to whom, because that never happened, because I ran away from home. But my stepmother, she found this false passport and also the one-way airline ticket to actually the following day. I was supposed to be on that plane down to Southern Europe. So we don't know where I was going to, who was going to be the receiver on the other end when I was landing from that plane. But I think that part of acknowledging is also to believe that I think this is really important, but you have to believe that there is a better life for yourself somewhere. And that is part of acknowledging as well, because I want to believe that when I can acknowledge that this happened to me and my father did this to me, but if I believe, I have this strong belief that there is a better life somewhere, then I am able to take steps. And I was only 8 years old, and this was in February 8, 1978. So a totally different landscape at that time. But to really take action, even though it's small baby steps, it's still a step forward. So I believe that acknowledging is also part of believing of a better future, because if we can build those healing bridges between our past to our present and to our future, then a transformation is happening. It's kind of really profound, and I have seen that in all my clients and who I've been working with. I think those two really goes hand in hand.
Well, I'm glad.
What was your second question, Leo?
Well, I guess I forget what the second question was, but it sounds like when your mom passed away from cancer, mm-hmm. your father mm-hmm. remarried, because you mentioned your stepmother.
Yes, but they have been divorced. My father and my mother had been divorced for 4 years before she died. So I was living with my mother, and I haven't seen my father for 4 years. And by the law in this country, their biological parent get custody automatically. So even though I haven't seen him for 4 years, I was forced to live with him. So, and then he had started a new life with a new lady, and, yeah.
Were you raised here, or where were you? What country are you referring to?
I'm born and raised in Sweden.
Okay. And so he was gonna, he had a one-way ticket for you to someplace in Southern Europe.
Yes.
Wow. Do you know what country that was?
No, I don't know. I don't know, actually. And I also believe that I have been struggling, because do I want to know? Is it necessary for me to know? And to be able to heal myself, I needed also to forgive him for having this heart of like a stone, you know? But also, forgiveness work is really hard, because you can struggle with how do you forgive somebody who doesn't think he needs to be forgiven. You know, he didn't think that he was doing something wrong, because that was what he was supposed to do, or, you know, so. I think that when we find ourselves in adversity or situations that really take us really down in a valley, we need to just keep on having hope, because hope is the only thing that moves us forward. And sometimes it's really hard to find hope, because we feel hopeless, or we feel fear, and fear is really a bad decision emotion maker, you know. So we need to stay away from those and really be careful about our emotions. Pay attention to our emotions, because they can trigger your mind and take you really deep down in dark places. So,
Where did you at
really
8 years
interesting
old,
conversation?
I'm so fascinated by so many aspects of your story. At 8 years old, where did you run away to? And did your stepmom help you? Did she like give you money and a peanut butter jelly sandwich? Like,
No, I came home from school.
Okay.
I came home from school on February 7th, and she said, "Well, I need to talk to you because I found this false passport and those airline and this airline ticket, one way airline ticket." And that was for the following day. And in Sweden, we have a book of Pippi Longstocking. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Okay, so there is one book that is actually Pippi Longstocking running away from home. And I was only 8 years old. So I thought, well, if she can run away, then I can do it, you know. So so she was kind of something back in my head. But she gave me 10 Swedish kronor, which is equally of almost a dollar. And then, well, I didn't know where to run. I didn't know my around the city because I only lived there for 6 months and I haven't been out so much. And I was only 8 years old. So I didn't have a plan. I only knew that if I was not going to board that plane straight to hell, I needed to get away from that apartment, my father's apartment. And so the rest is in the book, the upcoming book.
Oh, you have a book that you are. I see. Okay. Right, fair enough. Wow. Well, you know, that's a hook right there for you, ladies and gentlemen. And tell us the name of the book again.
From Me to You.
Oh, and when's that book going to be out?
It's going to be out in, really soon. We don't have a specific date yet, but really soon. So it's a really wonderful, beautiful story of the 6 month in my life. It starts with the 6 month in my life, and I'm writing it as a letter to my mom, my dead mom, and telling her what happened after she passed away. So it's really beautiful. I'm so proud of it, actually. So,
You talked about, you know, writing a letter to your 8-year-old self and thanking mm-hmm. her for running away. What was the yeah. format of that letter? And I'm asking because I think there's a lot of listeners who mm-hmm. have yet to acknowledge the strength, mm-hmm. courage, mm-hmm. and resilience mm-hmm. of their younger mm-hmm. self that needs to be acknowledged for yeah. what they've survived and what they've gone mm-hmm. through. I mean, mm-hmm. was this a short letter, like 3 sentences? Like, what was the format?
The very first letter that I wrote to myself, I just wrote that, "Dear Susie, what you have been going through this early age of just eight years old, and taking action and being courageous and being brave, and, you know, I want to thank you for saving my life." But when I expressed all those emotions of being grateful, something happened in my body. And I felt that the subconscious pain and the burden that I have been carrying around for like 34 years, they didn't belong to me anymore, because now it belonged to the letter, you know, it was out of my system and it belonged to the letter. And when that happened, I felt like a feeling of freedom, you know, feeling of freedom, because I had a peace in my heart. And so that started me to be interested in how writing is healing. So I studied that for like 8 years. And I have coaching clients in so many different countries around the globe. So I started to test out if they could write a healing letter to themselves. And their willingness to do that and sharing their stories of bravery and strength and resilience and what they have overcome, but also sharing their piece of wisdom. So I started to call them wisdom writers. And then I came to a point, well, this is so selfish to just keep for myself and for my coaching clients. So we need to get it out so more people can benefit from this simple yet profound four-step method of how to write a healing letter to yourself. So I created this app, and there is exactly the steps you need to take and in which order you need to take them and to write this healing letter of a past trauma, a past adversity you have been. And I have seen so many wonderful results, and that is people from all walks of life. You know, there's super successful people, but also just ordinary people. It doesn't have to be like, we have one lady who was a survivor from the Boston Marathon. We have a young guy, he hadn't spoken to his mom for 15 years. She was in jail, and after writing the wisdom letter, he actually booked a plane ticket and went to visit her. We have wisdom writers who are cancer survivors, suicide survivors, all different kind of people. So, and now we are collecting all those wisdom letters in a book collection. And so many people can benefit from the wisdom in those letters, how other people have survived and overcome their adversity, and give hope that you too can do it. And for some people, it will actually be your survival guide as well. So
what's the name of the app?
Yeah. From me to you. So the whole concept of from me to you is me sharing my story, speak up, sharing my story. And by identifying my life lessons, I'm also able to pull out the wisdom, what I have learned, and what can I give back to other people. And because I truly believe that we have come to a time when we need to collectively heal. It isn't just me or you or my coaching clients. We need to do it collectively to be able to not be re-victimized of all the things going on in the world right now, and to be able to equip ourselves, because life is going to give us some bumps on the road. And how can we build that strength and resilience to bounce back quicker instead of taking the deep valley, you know, before we are climbing up the mountain again? So
you were sharing earlier about, you know, when we journal, how vital it mm-hmm. is to pull out life lessons. And yes. what I've discovered personally is mm-hmm. sometimes I pull out a life lesson that probably doesn't serve me, or I don't want to say the wrong life lesson. I had an incident when I was in high school where mm-hmm. the coach asked me to give an interview to the news. And I said some outlandish statements. And the coach said, "You'll never be able to give interviews to the news again," because it was, he felt like I embarrassed the team and the school with my remarks. However, mm-hmm. everyone was talking about it the next day. My life lesson from that at the time was, be camera ready. Don't say anything outlandish. Be pleasant. But as I'm getting older, I realized the other life lesson was, say the outlandish thing, because that's what had everyone talking. So I think the life lesson depends on making sure you're pulling the life lesson that maybe feeds you in the direction that you want to go. What are your thoughts on that? On pulling out the life lesson that can serve you, or
mm-hmm. So we have in the letter, in the four-step method that I have developed, that there is actually three different life lessons that we identify. The first is, of course, the life lessons you learned about yourself And that is really one important one, because it raises your awareness. And the second one is the life lessons you learned about others, people around you. And then the third one is the life lessons you learned about the world in general. And in your example, that would be the life lessons you learned about the world, because you were told to be adaptable and to be friendly and all those kind of things to fit in. And sometimes when we can divide the life lessons into these three categories, then we can more clearly see that this is how this has affected me, because we need to see the pattern that this happened, this is what shaped me, and this is the life lesson. Because sometimes we have created a person that we are not aware of, that I am who I am because of, and sometimes it's not the best person, or you're not benefiting from being that person. So we need to take those steps in life lessons to identify, what did I learn about myself? What did I learn about other people? Because when I divide it into those two categories, then I can see my relationship with other people around me, my relationship with my sister or with my parents or with my coworkers, or, you know, and then the third part, the world in general. I have one wisdom writer who was really addicted to alcohol, and he said, well, I had a really supportive work environment for drinking, because there were dinners all the time with clients and there was always a lot of alcohol. So he said to me, well, what I learned was, it should be a natural question in a restaurant to ask by the waitress, do you want it with or without alcohol? Do you want your drink with or without alcohol? And so I think that when we divide those life lessons into ourselves and into others, then we can learn and be aware of if we have any patterns, how we behave towards yourself and to others.
When you look back at your story at age 8, and that mm-hmm. moment, what did you learn about yourself at that moment? What did you learn about others? And what did you learn about the world?
What I learned about myself was that I was much more braver than I thought. I followed through with actions which I didn't know. I was not aware of that. I also had this really strong belief that I could do it. I mean, that is pretty naive, you know, being 8 years old and thinking, I can do this. I can run away from home and be safe, because a lot of things can happen when you run away from home when you're a girl and you're 8 years old. So I learned, the life lessons I learned about myself is that I'm stronger than I thought. And I had more courage than I thought. And also that when something happens, I am capable of follow through with actions. And I also learned that running away from home is not equal to being brave. I mean, there is also a part of being naive, but I was only 8 years old, so I need to say that. But that is actually what I learned about myself. And what I learned about others is, my first life lessons identified by others is actually was really negative, because that was not trusting anybody, don't believe what they say. There is always some scumbags around. You know, they were really negative. So I needed to turn those into positive life lessons about other people. That, for instance, my stepmother, who actually risked her life to reveal my father's plan and try to see the positive in that situation instead of focusing on all the negative. And but when we do that, when I did that, I could actually see how it had shaped me and also affected my relationships in adult life by trusting issues or not letting people in close to my heart, you know, keeping a high integrity. You know, there is a lot of things we can be aware of that I am who I am, and this is what shaped me. And do I want to be this person, or who do I want to become? Because where we come from means something, but yet who you are right now and who you are becoming, that is even more important.
When you think about the world, what did it teach you about the world at large? I heard you talk about yourself and others, but how did it shape how you saw the world? What was your lesson?
Well, the life lessons I learned about the world is that it's, when I wrote this letter, my first life lesson was actually that it's not child friendly. There is a lot more we can do for children. And I mean, both being good parents, of course, but also in the school system and how we're taking care of our children and being supportive, because I don't know, I have a really strong feeling for children, because I was one of those who have been physically abused and running away from home and etc. So I think that we should take care more of our children. That I can say. And I can see as well, because I had a really interesting project with a South Carolina prison, the inmates in South Carolina prison. And there were two groups of 35 inmates that had been in prison for 20 years, 48 years, you know, a lot of years. And I did the wisdom letter writing process with them, for them to be able to write their own wisdom letter. And suddenly I found myself that I was representing that little kid that one of the guy has been physical abused to his kid. And then I was there leading and helping him to process his bad behavior to his kid. And the circle was kind of, you know, going back, that if I can turn my pain into something meaningful and help others, then that's my mission. So I think there is a lot of kids. I know there is a lot of kids who have a bad, bad childhood and not being properly taken care of.
The stats at the end of that movie, Sound of Freedom, were definitely alarming and illuminating. Mm-hmm. You mentioned trust of others. And I would imagine for a lot of individuals who have experienced physical or sexual trauma, and also the loss of a parent, and then the kind of abandonment by another parent, It becomes hard to trust people. How did that manifest itself in adult relationships for you? Were you ever able to get married? Did you feel like you were able to find your soul partner? How did that show up for you?
Well, I think it showed up many years later when I was going to be married. And on the wedding day, I had this strange feeling in my body that I couldn't actually identify. But later, I think it was a couple of days after, I tried to sit down and really be careful about, you know, what am I feeling? And that was the feeling of belonging, that now I belonged to somebody and we were going to have our family of our own. And I think that was the breaking point of trust, that you can totally let somebody in to your core and open your heart. And my grandmother used to say, it's easy to say I love you, but it's harder to allow somebody else to love you. So I think when we can open our hearts and feel a sense of belonging, then the trust is the positive consequence of that. That you can trust people around you. If that belonging is to a partner or to a circle of friends or some hobbies you're doing or close coworkers or whatever you have around you. But when you feel a belonging and that you're not alone, then that was the turning point for me, at least, that trust could fully take place and open up.
What was it about the relationship or your significant other that was appealing to you, that you were like, this is the person that I want to marry, this is the type of relationship I feel that I belong, outside of the sense of belonging and connection?
Mm-hmm. Feeling safe. You know, that is, you can see the pattern here, you know, from childhood to adult life, feeling safe is one of the biggest thing. So, and I see that in my clients also, that when we do all this work and they can see the pieces of the puzzle putting together and they can understand themselves better, then a lot of positive, good things, amazing things are happening because they are more willing to change, because they know, if I want those results in my relationship, or I want this results as a CEO for a company or whatever role I have, then I need to understand myself, who am I, and raise the awareness, and then change can take place.
You know, earlier, before we started recording, you mentioned that there was a miscarriage. Was that something that took place for you in your childhood, or is that something that during marriage?
Yeah, during marriage, I had two miscarriage. Yeah. So
I'm asking because I realize, you know, from talking to friends, how common a miscarriage is and how common it's been throughout history for women to have a miscarriage. And it's unfortunate that so many carry around the shame and guilt around having it because they're not aware of just how common it is. Can you talk to us about did you use journaling, or how did you navigate the experience of the miscarriage?
I was so committed that I wanted a child. And it took us 2 years to be pregnant with our daughter. When the miscarriage happened, that was before our daughter. And then we had a second one when she was 3 years old. And I think navigating after that is really, for me, it was not that I feel ashamed or I feel something is wrong with me or I feel guilt. That was not the case for me. It was more of a, my body is trying to tell me something that I'm not understanding. And I trust. I need to trust my body. And so for me, it was not that I didn't want to talk about it, because I had several friends who had the same struggles. It was more accepting that my body didn't want to go through this pregnancy. There was something wrong and something was imbalanced. And I was more thinking about it in a way of getting back and connect with my soul. Was I disconnected in any way? Or why is my body reacting and not taking care of this little teeny tiny thing? And also come to this really hard decision that, okay, now we're just stop trying. Because it's really hard on your body when something like that happens. So, and be grateful for the one child that we that I have. And so I've never thought about it as a shame or guilt or anything like that. It's more like trusting that something was not right. And this was my body showing me that this is how we're going to take care of it, because there's not harmony and balance, something in your soul, something going on. So that was my way of taking care of it.
I connect with that. I've, in the past couple of years, have been experiencing asthma. I'm 47 mm-hmm. and I have like adult onset asthma. They say it's related to COVID. I had COVID. But mm-hmm. also I'm experiencing dysautonomia, which is like a dysregulation of my nervous system. Mm-hmm. And some of my friends that I've talked to who have a medical background or spiritual or holistic type of background, you know, they often keep asking me, do I feel like that there are emotions trapped or words trapped, or is there exactly. something unexpressed that I'm now starting mm-hmm. to experience this? And I've been wrestling with that now, you know, and journaling and writing down my thoughts and ideas have really been helping me to get more clarity and maybe get back to that high school kid who was saying things that were outlandish versus mm-hmm. I do feel a bit more sanitized now mm-hmm. by life. So as you're sharing your experience of, you know, how you framed the miscarriages, it's allowing me to look at myself and what I'm experiencing a little deeper. And I hope it's the same for the listeners out there. Mm-hmm. You know, having a daughter and going through what you've experienced when you were 8, do you feel yourself more protective, or are you letting your kid off the leash? Is she free range? You just like, you don't even know where she is right now?
No, but I grew up super, super poor. I mean, we didn't have enough food, and not all clothes and shoes, but almost, was not in my size. Either they were too big or too small. So looking at my role as a mother to my daughter, I can see that I have been giving her and buying her a lot of clothes and a lot of shoes. And I had, being poor, I had one doll, just one doll. And I was so protective of that little, little doll. And Julia, my daughter, she had like a bunch of Barbies. So I can see in my motherhood that I'm trying, I have been trying to give her what I didn't have. And also given her the mindset of what is your potential or what can you be. And now she's an A student, honor student on a university in Los Angeles, and she's doing great. And she's amazing and humble. And so I can see that I have definitely had some shaping motherhood patterns from my past that I can see in Julia. So it's really interesting, actually.
I absolutely love that. And to kind of wind us down here, I know earlier you talked about the car accident and the impact that it's had on your brain. Even, you know, before we started recording, you were asking me to slow down the questions because you're still in recovery. Can you kind of talk to us about, when you say brain injury, what type of cognitive impairments you've been experiencing? And then what are some of the cognitive tasks or rehab exercises you've been employing to get your brain back to where it was or even stronger?
So this was in August 2016. So it at first we thought it was like a serious concussion, because I was a passenger in a car, in a private chauffeur that was taking me from my hotel to the airport. And when we crashed, all the luggage hit my back skull and my neck and my shoulder blades and everything. So at first, the doctor thought that this was really a serious concussion, because I had really a hard time of the hearing. I had a hard time of speaking. I was sensitive to light. And I walked very, very slowly, like an old, old lady. And after six, and they said it could take 6 months. And after 6 months, I was kind of, no, this is something wrong, because I couldn't remember things. I forgot the food in the oven. I was kind of having burned food all the time. And I had brain fatigue. I had like a really serious pain in my back skull. I knew something was wrong. So they did a fully neurological examination, and the cognitive disability is sometimes memory loss, sometimes brain fatigue, sometimes when you're planning things, I have a hard challenge to comprehend things in the right order. And when people talk fast, it's kind of harder to understand. And sometimes I have to find my words, like I'm talking to you right now. But still, it is a deliberate decision to come back to life again and to work again, because my brain is my product. I don't have a clock or something else I'm selling. My brain is my product. So I was totally committed and determined that I need to come back and to fully be able to work again. And that is also that what we talked about earlier about acknowledging or acceptance. When you accept that that Susie prior to the accident, she's not coming back, she's gone. So you need to create something new here. And that was also the turning point, because I struggled a lot looking myself in the mirror, and I kind of asked myself, who are you? Who are you? Who is this lady? Because I was not able to recognize myself and doing all this crazy stuff because my brain was not working. So I think that the tools that I have used is I have a go-to. You have to have a go-to somewhere, or a board on a wall or somewhere that you can write your notice and what's on your schedule or something like that. And it has to be visible, not in your iPhone. So that is one tool that I use. I also use, I need a lot of structure. So organize and structure, because that eases my brain. It doesn't have to work as hard. I also need to be mindful, to be present, because it takes a lot of energy, and being present, I can be fully concentrate on you and what we are talking about, and also giving myself a daily self-care of meditation or yoga or being happy now. And I think that a lot of people are struggling with, do we need to strive for happy ever after or just happy now? And I'm always saying be happy now, because happiness is a good medicine for your brain. And so, yeah, there's different things that you can do, and also try to be positive. I have an exercise that's really interesting. If you take the alphabet from A to the end and try to say all the positive words on A, like amazing, attractive, you know, and then B, beautiful, you know, and C, confidence, calm, and do that all the time, then you feed your brain with positive words. And that is also one of the self-care tools that I use to have a positive self-talk.
Is there a positive X word out there?
There is. I'm sure there is. I don't know which one though, but
when you talk about mindfulness, I'm going to assume you're referring to doing one thing at a time. If you're eating, you're just eating. You're not eating and reading and watching TV. If you're driving,
no,
you probably can't have music on.
No. I really believe that your brain needs to be where your body is. Your body needs to be where your brain is. So that is mindful for me, that if I'm talking to you, then I'm talking to you. If I'm eating, I'm eating. And it also, if you're trying to train yourself to do that one thing at a time and being present, there's a lot of things that you experience that you otherwise are missing out. So it's really positive, and I can see that in my clients when we do that exercise, and I give that as a homework for them, that they're kind of astonished by, oh my God, this is such a simple exercise, but oh my gosh, it's giving me so much, because I'm present at the dinner table, because I can talk to my wife and I talk to my kids, and I'm not checking out my iPhone, you know, and stuff like that. So yeah, being mindful is being where your body is, where your brain is, and doing one thing at a time.
Penultimate question. I always imagine that there's someone listening in who may be on the precipice of wanting to end their life. Before you kill yourself, what would you say to them, Susie?
There is one person around you that you can share your honest, deepest feelings and thoughts. Just one person. And sometimes we are not giving our family or friends the trust.
Last question. What are you looking forward to in the next 24 hours?
Oh, the next 24 hours. That was interesting. Having a good sleep. but also it's evening here. It's past 7 p.m. here in Sweden right now. I'm currently in Sweden. Otherwise, I'm living in Los Angeles, in California. But also having a good evening with the love of my life, having a cozy time.
I love that. Susie, once again, tell us the name of your book and where people can find you to work with you.
Mm-hmm. So the name of the book is From Me to You. And the app and the website is frommetoyoumovement.com. So go there and you can find everything you need. And there's a lot of tools, a lot of simple actions you can take. And hope to see you there. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Remember, this podcast is not a substitute for you going to get help. Call the 988 or any of the other 800 numbers listed in all the show notes. You can chat, talk, text, or you can go to thrivewithleo.com for one-on-one coaching with yours truly. Let's get to tomorrow together. Thank you so much, Susie.
Thank you, Leo.